Beth Gill is one of Britain's and the world's leading canoeists. In 2022, she became C1 Short Course Marathon World Champion, and she's hoping to qualify for the Paris 2024 Olympic Games in the C2 500m sprint. Remember, while there's been women's kayak events, women's canoeing events only first arrived at the Olympics at Tokyo 2020. But there's much more to Beth than just her sport. She's become a passionate advocate for raising awareness over the pollution in our rivers and waterways, as well as their ecological importance. The situation is serious. To put it into perspective, Beth says that in training, it's almost expected by some that you will get sickness bugs along the way. That can't be acceptable. In this episode, Beth explains why she is so passionate about this issue, as well as how it inspired her choice to take up a university course in this area. We also delve into her journey in canoeing, which hasn't always been smooth sailing. She transitioned to the sport in 2014 via the Girls for Gold program, with her first experience in a canoe not getting off to the best start. But she also tells us about being dropped from her then British canoeing program 5 years ago, something that has taught her valuable lessons and helped her get back to where she is today, with the Olympics firmly in her sights. Beth, welcome to the podcast. And of course, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day to have a chat with us on the show. For some context to those listening, we're recording this just before Christmas. How are things at the moment? What with going into that festive period, but I suppose still keeping on top of the sporting side of things as well?
Yeah, it's pretty busy. It's quite a, well, it's a full year coming up, obviously, with games and qualification. This is our winter training sort of period. So our season runs from April sort of through the summer months. And so right now we're just fitting in quite a lot of volume, gym work, a bit of running, which I quite like. Sometimes we can train abroad where it's a bit warmer. So it's a little bit chilly. There's been quite a lot of rain this year, which causes a bit of flow on the rivers. But no, it's cool. Yeah,
absolutely. I was going to say as well, how are you with kind of this, the period, the season, if you like, because obviously for a lot of people, a lot less daylight, it can be a bit energy zapping to even contemplate going for something like a run. Does that kind of come into your mindset as well? But obviously you're an elite athlete. It's kind of quite an important part of what you do.
Yeah, I'll be completely honest. It probably depends on the day. If you catch me on a good day, I love it because I like the volume and I like just going out and training and the gym. I like running. You catch me on like a tired day when like the days are shorter and you're trying to get up when it's dark and you're going out training when it's still dark in the afternoon, then I'm probably not quite so happy. But it's like on a whole, I do look forward to this time of year. So
yeah, absolutely. And that's like you're saying, I suppose it's a little bit calmer out of season compared to when you're in season as well. We'll talk obviously a lot more about the sporting side of things and all things canoeing later on in the chat. But I'm kind of going to dive into something that I know is a cause that's close to your heart, namely raising awareness of pollution within our rivers and waterways, something I'm sure plenty of us are seeing a fair amount of media coverage on, particularly in the recent years. As well as kind of their ecological importance and their importance to our way of life, essentially. What was it that, I suppose, first opened your eyes to the scale of the problem? Obviously, your sport ties into it a little bit because of where it happens to take place. But I imagine was there that moment or first instance that, I suppose, really opened your eyes to what was going on?
Yeah, so, well, for context, when I was growing up and I was at school, I played hockey. So I wasn't really around rivers. I'm from Newcastle, so I drive over the River Tyne and it's kind of central to our city. But I'd never really been on the rivers at all. So then I got into canoeing, and after a couple of years, I moved a lot of my training from sort of a centralised lake to the river and spent, gosh, 20 plus hours just up and down the river, and we just start to see things that I guess if you like ordinarily would walk past or drive past a river and you go, oh, like it looks beautiful, that you wouldn't always get to see. So you get to see the world from like not only like a beautiful like vantage point, but also you see some stuff that you wouldn't normally see. And at the same time, I then took up a degree at the University of Nottingham in natural sciences, but sort of gradually headed down the environmental sciences route. So then alongside spending time on the river, I was learning more about it and the pollution, a lot of the things that we don't always see as well, which fascinated me, like the microplastics and all of the, like just the ecosystem and all of the little invertebrate that we don't see as well. And the impact that they have on their own ecosystem, the effect it has on us, and just this circular effect really. And just the more I was learning about that, and the more I was spending time on the rivers, it just really started to open my eyes to it and really show the importance of, like, obviously if I hadn't spent time on the rivers and I hadn't been learning about them, I wouldn't know, and then how we communicate that to each other and spread the awareness of it all, really. So yeah, it all sort of happened a little bit hand in hand, and my interest in it.
Yeah, almost one thing coming after the other.
Yeah.
Is there kind of a way to, I think we all broadly sort of know, but a way to kind of summarize or just put into perspective how severe the issue is?
Yeah, so I guess, we hear a lot on the news and we can see a lot of the figures right now, and a lot of it's focused on like the sewage and the release of that. There's actually quite a good documentary on BBC the other day about it as well. So it really is quite severe. If I said that, like, from an athlete perspective and my group that train on the river, it's quite frequent that we actually call it trend belly. So if the river's high, like right now, it's like the number of people that get sickness bugs and so on from it just increases like exponentially. And some of the paddlers that race sort of down like the whitewater type, like river racing and slalom, it's almost like they expect that they'll get ill when there's been high rivers, and obviously they're getting splashed a lot more than I would in my discipline. And I think to me that just really highlights how we've almost come to accept, oh, it's just called Trent Valley, I'll just get better in a few days. But actually how severe that is and the knock-on effect that has. Like, I'm learning more now about how, obviously, like antibiotics and all of this, it really does start to spiral. We've got to get a handle on it, because it's not good for all of us, really.
Well, absolutely. And it's something you don't consider, really. I mean, you know, whether you're tuning in for Olympics or a competition, and what that side of training essentially is that none of us would really know about. And you say that expectation, is that something that you kind of take on yourself? I mean, I don't know if you've had something that's, you know, that sickness bug, or whether it's been something that's kind of really impacted you in your training.
I suppose, like, luckily for me, I'm actually not, I don't always experience it. I just sort of, it's just a well-known kind of thing around. And even like just like washing boats, making sure you don't spread things across different rivers, and hearing about it, communicating about it all. It's like, I think it's kind of just like, it's part of the parcel, which in the sport, and I don't think that's not very good at all. And I think it's then the knock-on effect, even if like you're not on the rivers, like obviously it's not just kayakers, there's rowers, there's supboards, open water swimming. Like, I think it's great that people want to get outdoors and use our natural environments to go and do sport, but it's not a nasty side effect that can happen. And like, we, like, as a country, I don't think it's acceptable that, like, we wouldn't put sewage on our streets. Why would we do that in the rivers? And actually, I think people sometimes think, oh, I just put it down the river and I'll never see it again. But that's not true. It comes back around. And we're quite, as humans, we're probably quite selfish. And I think it's realizing that actually when we cause this damage, it's going to come back round and impact us again. Like, I think sometimes that's the only way to communicate, because I think sometimes people just think, oh, it's not going to bother me again. I don't spend time on the rivers. I think that's, it's not a great mindset that we all have, but I think it, unfortunately, that's kind of sometimes the way.
Yeah, like you say, unfortunately. And I mean, even you don't have to go all that far back to when we're in the depths of the pandemic, if you like, and nature, the riverways, waterways being a large part of that, was such a release for people. Yeah. And perhaps opened up a lot of eyes as to how important they are, just from my mindfulness point of view. But like you say, if you take, say, the microplastics as an example, then it's also just important for your health ultimately. And like you're talking about the sickness bugs, that's a whole other aspect that maybe other people don't appreciate. But is that part of the way forward, is to communicate just how important it is for society, really, and just the health of society, to keep those waterways as clean as possible?
For sure. I think, like, if we don't communicate it, and we don't, like, us having this conversation and people going having a conversation over dinner with their family and passing it on and on, we just don't know about it. That I'm not here saying that I don't know everything and anything about, like, the rivers, but what's important, I find important, is that I've learned little bits, and how it's, like, to me, like, realize how significant a problem this is. But had I not been either exposed to the rivers or through university, maybe I wouldn't have known this. So I think communication is key, and the more that we all know about it, the more we're going to try and make a difference and realize what we're doing. Like, just think about, like, the knock-on impact of what we're doing, and hopefully make a small changes will gradually make bigger scale changes in this country.
Yeah, definitely. And like you were saying at the start there, and essentially, I suppose, has inspired your decision to go to university and to study this side of things. What kind of things are you learning in that? And is there anything you're hoping to take going forward? I don't know whether you've got sort of an ambition or a target with that degree in mind, because I think it's your final year as well.
Yeah. So, if I'm going to be honest again, this year, a lot of it's focused on sport and achieving in that side. But there are some cool opportunities coming up. Just, like, again, for me, I just love, when I was growing up, I loved sport, and probably my studies came second to sport. Not everyone agreed with that one, but that was my way. Whereas now, actually going through the degree and with my sport, it's opening up opportunities for further study, particularly in the area of rivers, and also just other opportunities along there. It's definitely something I'd like to continue to go down, just keep opening doors. That's kind of my philosophy of a lot of things, is like, open as many doors as possible and go through the one that excites you most, and then start it again. So that's kind of where I go with it. As long as you're enjoying it, it's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's quite a nice, healthy way of kind of looking at it a little bit, because, say, for example, identity comes up so much as a topic on this podcast with athletes, whether they're considering themselves as an athlete or as, say, a canoeist in your case, or a swimmer, whoever it might be. And they can be so, it's easy to do, where you can be so set in that one identity. But is that quite important of you to almost have that broad range of identities and that broad sense of, I suppose, who you are as a person? That, yes, sport is important to you, but there's a whole lot more to it than that.
Absolutely. Like, when I first started this sport, I came through a talent transfer process. So when I came in, it was very focused on sort of speeding up the process of learning the sport. And I became, as most athletes are, we can be quite, well, focused and can be perfectionists at what we're trying to do. And that's not always the healthiest way to go about it. Like, you get results, but what I then did is, by moving a lot of my training over to the river, and I just went about this, I wanted to learn, I want to be the person that knows loads about my sport, knows lots of people from around the world. And if I were to look back on it in years to come, like, that I've really just enjoyed that, and I learned so much, and I can almost be this book of knowledge about what I'm doing. And that led me to just meeting lots of different people from across the UK, but also abroad. I think it's just, and then taking up the degree as well, I just think it's then allowed me to have more than just, it's like, yes, the sport was kind of central to it, but it's enabled me to develop a breadth around the outside of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then almost the sport becomes, it's more than just doing, like, you're sort of really involved with it, and it's led obviously to like other interests, like the rivers and the pollution, and having a community of people out there that I enjoy being with and learning from. And yeah, I think then you become a person in the sport rather than just a number doing the sport.
Yeah, absolutely. Was that something that took a bit of time to build, a bit of time to realize, and how do you think it's almost shaped you into the person you are today?
It's definitely taken a while to realize, and I'm probably still realizing it. It's definitely like making me the person. I'm probably a very different person to the person I was 5, 6, 7 years ago. I think I've just learned a lot about sport and how I want to go about it and the different things I want to achieve when I'm doing it. Building it as a story, and like just stacking the bricks up to make something bigger that, yeah, I'm proud of doing. Like the journey I've made in the past few years, I'm really proud of. I think the way I went about it was like, I think sometimes we can come like trapped in a bubble. And I just said to like, sort of kept my close family and close friends, and just said, look, if you see me in this bubble, just come prod me. And like, it's like open me out of this bubble. And I think that's really important. And yeah, having my boyfriend is also a kayaker, so we're trying to basically do the same. We're going after very similar goals. And we talk about it loads, and we write our training, all our own training together. So that's great. We can like have these conversations. We've gone through this really cool journey together, but also we have to break that bubble and go, no, we're going to go do something away from kayaking and away from canoeing as well.
Yeah.
But we have a nice balance, and we help each other through it.
Yeah, I was going to say, having someone in your corner who understands it and, like I say, is going through similar goals as you, that must help too, because you've got someone who knows where you're coming from when there are those days, like you say, when you're in that bubble, or if it's been a particularly tough competition, whatever it might be, just to have that voice that understands.
Like Dan is very, he's quite chilled, and I'm quite like, I can get quite, I don't know, perfection, like I'm quite a perfectionist about things. So I think we actually bring this really cool balance to each other, and we help each other in those ways. And it's, yeah, we can have some like great conversation. We're often, you know, away at the same competitions. We're at the qualifications together for the games, and we're going through that same journey again this year. So I think sometimes people think, oh gosh, the house must get so stressful, but I think it'll be wrong. Some days it is, like some days someone will have a bit of a nightmare, but we can help each other and bring each other back on track and help. And the other cool thing is my brother is a very good cyclist. So he's actually on the British cycling equivalent program. So that's also interesting, because obviously they're different sports, but we can have some really cool conversations about, like, different sports, there's different, like, and they're different environments, but there's a lot of similarities. So we can help each other there as well. So, yeah. And he literally just lives down the road, so we're often going for coffees as well, which is nice.
Yeah. They're for a helpful chat whenever you need.
Yeah.
And like you say, broad range of athletes that we've had on this show while we've been doing it. And again, by no means am I an elite athlete at all, but you do see those crossovers, even though that's very wildly contrasting sports, but a lot of the fundamentals are still ultimately there, and you can still take those. from sport to sport, and also into your own life, whether you're in sport or not in sport. My final question before we delve more into the sport, just quickly going back to the waters and the river side of things, and I suppose it's kind of two questions in one, but A, how do you keep getting that message out there to people, but also reinforcing to individuals what can they do from their point of view and in their everyday actions as well to try and make a difference where possible?
Yeah, so I think, like, for individuals, I think sometimes it can be as I was like, well, I think sometimes, like, you know, we put things down, for instance, microplastics in washing, like, we're going to wash our clothes, and there's, like, dyes and, like, little microplastics that will come out of that, or when we're scrubbing plates and things like that, or washing our car, and that obviously goes down the drain, and that's not always caught. So I think it's just, like, how, I think, for me, it would be like, instead of using this amount, can we use this amount that we don't need to use quite as much, or wash the clothes quite as much, or put quite as much detergent in there? And also, there's some really cool companies out there as well that are like, that are like some of the cleaning, like making cleaning products that are basically better than some of the chemicals we're putting down the drain as well. I think just keeping an eye on that, and just like, I think communicating it, and therefore more people having an awareness of the damage, and actually these little things that we can change that are going to like affect lives massively. We're not asking people to like make, like, I mean, you can, but small things as well can make a massive difference. Like, and I think, yeah, just having that awareness and communicating it is really important, because otherwise we just wouldn't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I say, it was something else, but I think I heard the phrase this week, it's the little one percenters that can make all the difference. Exactly like you're saying, tiny little differences can obviously add up into something a lot more significant. Make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media. Search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn. Let's talk about sport, given the nature of this show. I've obviously mentioned this in your intro to the podcast, of course, in that you won the C1 Women's Short Course Gold at the 2022 Canoe Marathon World Championships, but there's also Olympic hopes there as well. Obviously, 2024 is coming around pretty swiftly, what with Paris. And it's the C2 500 meter sprint I think you're looking for on those Olympic hopes in particular. So shall I start with that, since time it goes by very, very quickly,
yes.
And it won't be long until those Olympics are here. Again, what with Tokyo being a year later than planned, it feels like it's been a shorter window than normal. Has that kind of correlated for you? I mean, how is it going at the moment, and what does that timetable look for you going into next year?
Yeah, so it's definitely feels condensed. Like, it doesn't feel that long ago since sort of this cycle started. Yeah, for us, we have a qualification event that happened in September. We have another qualification event in May time. So that's the big one. That's kind of, that's our European continental qualifiers, and we have to win that event. It's pretty cutthroat. But that's the plan, and we're going after it, and all seems to be going well. So yeah, I think it's just like keeping the focus on it, but also keeping it relaxed, because that's when performances, you've got to enjoy it, and otherwise the performances don't come. But yeah, that's the plan this year. So it seems to be coming around quite quick.
Yeah.
But yeah, I enjoy it. So,
which perfectly teed up my next question on my notes, which was, are you enjoying the process?
Yes. Yeah, I do enjoy it. I enjoy working with the team. I think it comes with its challenges as well. But yeah, I enjoy being part of a team and we're going after a goal in that way. And yeah, I think I sort of said it earlier as well, going after, yeah, boyfriends going after a different event, but the same goal at the end of it. So it's, I like having a challenge there and like, how do we fit the pieces together in the puzzle to make it happen? And I think then as long as I've given everything I can to do it, and I know that I've not left a stone unturned, then like you can be proud of that journey. And like, as long as I then learn from that as well, I think that's the most important part, because then you can't regret anything. You can learn from it, learn from mistakes, but you won't regret how you got to that point. So that's important for me.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, it sounds like, again, a healthy mindset to it, because from me looking inside from the outside, yeah, it could be so easy just to get caught up in that pressure and to make it your everything. But again, going back to what you said earlier about having that wider perspective and that wider view, and like I say, having your boyfriend to bounce off of as well in terms of those chats and those conversations, is that why it's been so enjoyable at the same time? Because you have that balanced perspective on everything, and like you say, if you put everything into it and you have no regrets, whether it happens or not, you walk away happy.
Yeah, I think so. Like, basically, like the story goes, about 5 years ago, we were both taken off the program, kind of just told to go do something different. Like, we probably didn't have, they're like, it's not really for you. And we, that was quite a hard one to take. I'd just come off of quite a big injury as well. And so we sat down, the two of us together, and I made this, like, this pyramid, this 5-year plan. And we've just gone out, obviously we've had the lockdown in there as well, just to throw another curveball in. So it's been pretty challenging to do it. But there's so many things that I've like done in these past 5 years that I look back on and go, I don't know how I did that, but I'm really proud of doing it. And just continuing, like, yeah, we made this 5-year pyramid. I'm just gonna like see that out, and then take from that, the learnings from that, into the next block, because I enjoy canoeing, so I will keep going at it. But it's, yeah, I think that's really important. It's just like, I've set this target, and like there was all these like little goals along the way, including all the marathons and the sprint stuff, and like seeing, like knowing that we've put all this effort into it, enjoy doing it, is, yeah, that's most important for me.
Yeah. Was that moment getting taken off the program, has it turned out to be a blessing in disguise of sorts, almost like an essential reset at that time that you might have needed?
Yeah, I think yes, because of the way that I went about it. So it could have gone one way or the other, but I took that opportunity to go and learn more about sport and speak to lots of different people and expand my network and sort of take myself out of this smaller bubble, and just built up, yeah, this knowledge base and enjoyment. And we went away and set sort of this, we've sort of, I say we, there's a group of us that have created a training group out of a kayak club on the river, a Nottingham Kayak Club. And we've brought together lots of people from, you know, it's drawn lots of people from other clubs around the country. And it's just really like, it's kind of just really blossomed. Like we can fill the river from bank to bank. If you know the River Trent, it's quite wide and it's just full. And it's like, I think the reason it works is because no person in it, no matter what you've achieved, is any different to anybody else. And everyone's there for a certain goal. I think this year, like every single, we can have like up to 30 people across the river and everyone's raced for Britain at some sort of stage, some level. And I think that's really cool. And I think that's from those like really basic, simple values and philosophies. So we like now it draws in lots of people from around the country, and that's really nice to see. And it's nice to see people doing well off that and helping other people as well. So yeah, I think coming off the program initially was real hard, but the way that we've gone about it has made me the person that I am today, and I've been able to learn so much and achieve a lot of things, and it's also opened my eyes to more things that I want to achieve. So yeah, I've yeah, if I look back on it, I go, it was a really, it's been a really hard 5 years, but really enjoyable and rewarding.
Absolutely. Is there anything you kind of pinpoint as that key learning, or that key side of it that has really, I say, turned you into the athlete you are today?
Gosh, that's a hard one. maybe I think it's probably just a combination of lots of things, like lots of little bits where, like, you can be angry at things, or you can just like turn that round into like, that can be a fuel to go and do things, but also like to build yourself in other ways and enjoy it. And I think you definitely have to be enjoying it to do well at it. You can't force yourself to enjoy it, but I think when things aren't going as good and I'm not enjoying it, then it's probably a warning sign to me to go change something up here, Beth. But yeah, I think it's also like, yeah, it sounds kind of cliche. A lot of people say like, you just don't give up, but I think you don't, you just find different routes to get there. And I've by no means got there, but I'm trying my best to like, just keep like setting little goals and going after them.
Yeah. And like you say, enjoying the process at the same time. And obviously this kind of career has been a big part of your life. And I think, you know, in my research for this podcast, and I think the second news result that comes up for you when you're Googled is from your A-level results. And when you're, you know, talking about going to have this career in rowing. And obviously with the Olympics in mind as well, but with everything you've accomplished, I mean, what has it kind of lived up to those expectations, and the highlights along the way, are they really, really special to you?
Yeah, I think that the things that I've achieved in the marathon so far, I think, because you like the worlds, and like, that's more than like, that was a dream. I enjoy every moment of it, and I look back on it and it gives me tingles every time I think of it. Just the people that were around me and support that I had, like, that was, and especially off the back of the years prior to that, like, we'd done that, like, me and Diamond achieved that. Yeah, there's other bits that, like, I probably didn't realize quite. I think I always wanted to do sport. Like, if I could do sport as my living, that would be great. I think you can sort of, there's other, when sport becomes your living, then there's other challenges that are involved in it that I probably didn't realize when I was younger. But on a whole, like, those achievements and building me to go through the journey that I have in the past few years, like, yeah, I probably wouldn't change that. I wouldn't have expected it either when I started out.
Yeah. And like I say, wanting to be in sport, it's a question I frequently ask, but it's a small question, but it's a deep question at the same time. Yeah. And you get various different answers, but can you sum up what sport means to you, I suppose meant to you, at the same time?
As much as you kind of just said before, like, sport being it, sport is my everything. I enjoy it. I enjoy the people. I enjoy the feeling that it gives me. I enjoy the challenge of going after these goals that I've set. I don't enjoy the lows, but I enjoy coming out of the lows. And yeah, it's kind of just this, yeah, you can't predict things that are going to happen. Even when you get onto, like, when you get out there and you're racing, you're like, you know what you can do, you don't know what anyone else can do. So there's all these kind of unknowns that you've got to kind of adapt to. And I think sport's fantastic. Doesn't matter what level it is, like, it's, yeah, I just think everyone should be involved in sport in some way. And I just, yeah, hope that people can find a sport that they enjoy, because there's so many out there.
Yeah,
I didn't know what canoeing was when I was at school. And it's kind of just came from that. I think I applied for the talent identification, the UK sport program, Girls for Gold, just, I was like, oh, it'll help my hockey. And the more I got, like, the more I just got addicted to canoeing, and it was a challenge that I wanted to take on. And I was rubbish at the start. I was falling in all the time. And I think the first race that I did, we have these buckets that you've got to go into. And I got into the bucket and I was so happy. And then this crosswind came in and we paddled on one side. And it just like took me out the side of the bucket. And I just couldn't get back in. So when everyone else finally got into the buckets, I was facing the other way. And it was mortifying. I think I cried so much. And actually now Dan now says to me, he watched that race and he laughed at me. He didn't know who I was, but he laughed at me. But yeah, it's just then like, just this challenge that I kept going at. And yeah, I'm still trying to go at, because it still throws curveballs in at me and there's still so much more that I want to do. But yeah, I love sport.
Oh yeah, hands down. I mean, I know I'm biased in that I'm doing a show and... Yeah. Again, I work in sport, but I suppose one of the ultimate lessons there again is it's not where you start and how you start, whether it's facing the wrong way or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's ultimately where you end up and where that journey takes you. And that's a prime example of that.
Yeah. How you attack it, how you go after it, how you want to make it happen. The mindset's definitely a one. I'm always trying to make that better. So I don't think anyone's got it perfect. But yeah, I think that's, it doesn't matter like what sport is. Like even hockey, I don't think I started that till I was, year 9 or 10 at school. So like, I think just sport, ultimately, I think when I first started out, I wanted to be like this great runner. And then running turned into, I think gymnastics, and then gymnastics turned into hockey, and then hockey turned into canoeing. So like it's, yeah. I think it's just a journey, just open doors and go through the ones that excite you the most and you enjoy.
Yeah, definitely. And you touched on the Girls for Gold program there. And I think, again, we're starting to rack up a lot of athletes on the show who've been through that program and it's helped them along the pathway that they are now. And like I say, hockey before that, canoeing now. But in terms of that program itself, what kind of tools did it give you, opportunities did it give you that really made it work for you? I suppose
I think Girls for Gold has been a huge part of my life, and I've met so many people through it, and there was quite a group of us that sort of got through to that final stage. Some people like not doing sport now, but there's like, first of all, there's friends for life there. Some things within the program were great, some things weren't so good. They all shaped me into doing what I'm doing now, and I'm enjoying it now. I think it's like to take athletes from one sport and try them out in the other. Basically, canoeing wasn't in the games. So it first came into the games in Tokyo for women. So it's, you've had men's kayak and women's kayak and men's canoe, but there was no women's canoe. So it was the first time it was going into the games for equality. And basically the sport, like the disciplines, just like it's just improved, like improving on an exponential scale. I'm proud to have been a part or to be part of that. Girls for Gold was really good, and they also have programs within, you know, across other sports. But I think it's then how I took it, the steps I then made after that. So Girls for Gold got me into the sport, and then it's how I've taken it from there.
Yeah, absolutely. It kind of gives you those introductory tools, and then you do what you will, and ultimately that's led you again to where you are now. And even just you referencing Tokyo there and it being the first Olympics with women's canoe, I can remember that being reported at the time as well while we were all watching. And you see where, I suppose, women's sport in general is going at the moment. Obviously, there's still a lot of work to do in some disciplines, a lot more than others. But does that fill you with kind of hope for the future and for, I suppose, that next generation coming through as well, that things are going in the right direction on that side of things?
Yeah, definitely. I think that with a lot of things, like there's still a lot more work to do, but I think the really good thing is that there's been a really good starting point. and that progress is being made. So I think there's like some really good stuff happening across the board in women's sport, and sport in general, men's sport, women's sport. I think it's really powerful and really important, and I think we just got to keep going at it. As I say, I think that's the case in a lot of things. Just keep improving on what we've got. I think it's a really good starting point, and it's going in a great direction.
Yeah, and in terms of women's canoeing as well, yeah. And now that I suppose girls in school can see it on the Olympics, whereas before they couldn't, is it almost the sky's the limit kind of thing in terms of that sport's potential in this country and across the globe as well?
Yeah, I think canoeing's potential in the UK is incredible. At the moment, it's very, very small. If you go to other countries, like the United States, Canada, China, most of the other European countries, it's huge. I sometimes train with a club in Spain, and they have like a significant majority of them in canoes, and also I think their two biggest sports are canoeing and football in this town, and they have a huge waiting list. But unfortunately, in this country, kayaking has a lot of historical background, canoeing not quite as much, but I really think it can be something great here. Obviously, we have so many rivers and waterways, and they're so central to our country. I think canoeing, particularly for women and men in this country, needs some improvement. But I think loads of people should be able to access it. It's so easy to access a canoe club. And it's great fun, and I think it's good for the mindfulness, for the skills, knowledge. It's obviously low impact as well. So, I think a lot more work can be done in that area.
Yeah, and like I say, consider what we have in this country at our disposal, and as you said, the potential there. It's there is no limit, I think, to it, and it'd be really exciting to see where it goes once time, obviously, and increased exposure on TV or whatever it might be comes into play as well. And just thinking as well, obviously asking that question about young girls or whoever it might be being able to now see it a lot more than previously, was that something that was important for you growing up, whether you had that role model in women's sport or just that role model in sport, again, whatever discipline it might be? I don't know if that was important for you growing up, or whether that drive to be in sport, to have a career in sport, was very much something from within, or perhaps those closer to you inspiring you to go down that line.
Yeah, I think I remember watching, I was with my very best friend from home, and she was a swimmer, and we watched the swimming in, I believe it was Beijing, like on the TV. And to me, that was, I don't even know exactly, I don't know what sparked it, but I just wanted to do that. I wanted to just be able to to do the sport and go to these great, and just do it full time. I actually don't know the particular catalyst from that. It just kind of, from there, that's what I wanted to do. So I think, exposure is the same with the rivers and the pollution and all of it's communicating it. I looked up to some like very, very good athletes, but I think it's having that exposure and communication of how you get there, like what have you got to do to get to that point. Otherwise, for me, I was kind of just exploring lots of different ways, and my parents were great. They were like, Beth, if you want to do that, you go do that. Beth, if you want to spend all this time doing sport, that's fine. You're going to have to learn how to you'll learn that balance between sport and as long as you're happy, basically. That was the kind of thing. You just got to be happy with whatever you're doing. But you're kind of going out there navigating your way, well, how do I get to that point? I suppose that's good, because then it's kind of navigated by which one you're enjoying and things like that. You're not just going plowing straight, doing one thing. But And that's given me a lot of skills to having done so many different sports that I take are really helpful now. But yeah, I think it's, if I could like inspire people, that would be incredible. Like, I used to love coaching. Oh, I still do enjoy coaching. I used to coach a lot in hockey as well. I think it's great when you see like that little glisten in like the eyes when you've inspired something or someone's learned something. So I like just inspire people to get, it doesn't have to be to go to super high levels in sport, just to be involved and make that difference or that change to people and to give them an enjoyment in something would be really cool.
Yeah, definitely. And I think even something like just taking part in a university club or a school club, and the friends you take away from that, the people you take away from that, the skills, the lessons, you name it. It's, even if it's, that's the only level you're going to get to, there's nothing wrong with that, but you still take so much from it. And like you said, trying to be an inspiration for people, is that almost like a goal in itself, I suppose, for you? And that helps drive you forward, is that you could be, and probably are already, that role model for a lot of people.
It's something that, yes, I would like to be. I don't, like, that's, I think that I'm going to inspire people. I hope that what I do will help and inspire people, as opposed to, like, forcing to inspire people. Yeah, I just think, like sort of probably going back to some of your other questions, but I was very fortunate to have a great school PE department who opened so many doors for us, like so many different teams, lots of different sports to take part in. The head of PE was called Jackie Atkinson, and she was great, and all the other PE teachers as well that then supported me to make all these, like, to keep going after these goals and take us all over the country and overnight stays and national, like, I think went to so many different national competitions as well that just gave me that exposure to actually what high level sport is, and the opportunities, and I think that then creates this drive and the skills to go after it, whether that's sport or academics. I think it helps in both ways, but like that also then enabled me to create friends of all different ages as well, because we'd be traveling as a team with older and younger. So yeah, I think it's definitely just getting involved, and I think for people to people providing opportunities for people to get involved as well is huge, and it doesn't go unnoticed.
Yeah, absolutely. And broadens your life, broadens your horizons, and it gives you all sorts of valuable insights into all corners of life. So yeah, wholeheartedly back that. My final one for you then is, obviously, 2024 very near, matter of days away. Where can we see you in the near future competing? And I suppose, again, that timetable, but more so in the short term.
Yeah, so we at the moment we're in like our sort of winter training. It's going to be a busy year and hopefully a very exciting one. We'll first race in April. That's our sort of national selection in Nottingham for kind of set up most of the year. Our final Olympic selection is May out in Hungary. So fingers crossed. And then we have a couple of World Cups after that. So European and World Championships as well around the Olympic Games. So I suppose at that point we'll work out where we're at and which ones we want to use like for experience into the games or other opportunities. And at the back end of the year, there's some really cool marathon races that I would also like to have a go at.
Definitely. It's like I say, busy schedule, but all very, very positive stuff. And as I'm sure everyone listening to this as well, along with all of us here, will be keeping those fingers crossed that things pan out in the way you hope. And when they do come around, it'd be great to see you competing at those Olympics when they do come around. Thank you so much, Beth.
Thank you very much for joining the show.
Like I say, lots of important topics of conversation, whether it's about sport, identity, and those waterways as well. It's something we haven't actually touched on before. So I think people can take a lot of things away from that in terms of awareness. But like you mentioned at the midway point, those one percenters, those little actions as well to try and make a difference. And as I said, fingers crossed for Paris 2024. But thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me. Enjoyed the time flowing by, so thank you.
A huge thank you to Beth once again for taking part in the episode, and also to the Athlete Media Group for the help in setting up the opportunity. We hope everyone enjoyed, and as I said there, here's hoping that Olympic dream comes true. Thank you to everyone for tuning into this episode of Sportspiel as we return for our new series in 2024. For more on the show, you can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and now also on TikTok. All of our handles are at SportspielPod. You can also visit our website to catch past episodes and find out more. The address is sportspielonline.com. That is it for this particular episode. Join us next week where you will hear from a very special guest in Ben Gallagher, a British Army veteran whose life was turned upside down after he was shot on active duty. Until then, it's a goodbye from me, and you will hear from us then.